Hello.
Hello.
Long time no chit chat.
Yeah, right? Podcast. What is this?
What are podcasts?
I don't know. Radio on the internet.
Is that what you say when your extended family members talk to you over the holidays about, hey, you still doing that show with that friend of yours? You get any of those conversations?
I don't really know. I mean, I often forget to, I mean, I don't obviously bring up the that I have a podcast typically. It's like 50th down on the list of topics that I bring up. But occasionally I'll be with like an old coworker or an old friend, or occasionally my fake doctor cousin. And they'll be like, "Oh, hey, I downloaded a couple of episodes of your show." Or I just finished one of your episodes of the show. I'm like, "Oh yeah, which one?" It's inevitably like six episodes back, which makes me think that most people, like regular people, are not timely with their listening of things. They're always a little bit behind or catching up on stuff, and then I'll go, "Oh yeah, okay, that's cool. I remember that we talked about that. I don't know what we said." And this last one we did, you should listen to that one because that'll be real good because I remember what I said there, and you'll probably like that one.
Well, also, it's usually an extended family member where I know that they this is not the content that they seek. It's mainly just because they're listening to me. So it's
They just
always,
want to hear your voice on a more frequent basis.
They would be like, what is this thing that Joe is so into? So that's
And they're willing to invest hours of their time to try and figure out what it is.
I assume so. It's very difficult to get a hold of me, Dan, as you are well aware from
Why don't
us.
you have a call, Joe?
I
That's my Joe's family member voice.
No, that's only really my Aunt Terry. But yeah. Anyway, this is just a lovely time to catch up and to commemorate the occasion. They had your bourbon of choice, the Michter's, on sale
Oh, look at that.
at the Gelson's. So I got it and I'm having a Dan, which, as
Which
you are aware, is bourbon in a glass neat, except I can't do it. So there's one ice cube in here because I'll die.
well, that's acceptable. Although, it's 64 degrees in my office here, so that's probably cold enough for, most people, but you can have your ice cube.
It's 66 here too.
You got the bourbon, because there's a handful of the varieties of the Michters there.
Yes, it's the Michter's bourbon. The Michter's small batch American whiskey was also on sale, but I did not get that one.
I do like the American whiskey, even though it doesn't technically qualify as a bourbon. I think it is a little bit smoother and a little sweeter, and you should try that one of these times too, because you'll probably like it better.
Oh, why didn't you tell me that before I bought it? Because it takes me forever to get through this thing.
Mail it to me. You didn't consult me. I feel like I've stated that opinion before. I'm probably not vociferously enough for anyone to remember, but yeah, I think I like the American whiskey a little bit better than the bourbon because it takes a little bit of the edge off.
You know why I bet that is?
Because it's not in a brand new barrel. It's aged in like a Scotch barrel or something, whatever they did.
Well, I was going to guess they probably use more wheat in the ratio because they usually makes a smoother American whiskey.
I looked at it briefly. I believe the thing is just that they used in the same way that they do sherry casks for different things. I think they used some other cask for the American whiskey, and unless it is a brand new whiskey cask created specifically for that particular batch, it cannot be considered bourbon, which is why that is called American whiskey or something like that.
Yeah, I believe the rule is a brand new charred American oak barrel for bourbon, if I'm not
Yeah, that
mistaken.
sounds about right. That sounds about right. I got a bottle of Chestnut Farms for Christmas. Are you familiar with the Chestnut Farms?
I have never heard nor seen this.
It's a tall bottle. It's about eagle rare in height. It's got a big horse. It's got a big horse on it.
One eagle rare in height.
Yeah, well, eagle rare is a unit of measurement in my little home bar cabinet because it is the only bottle that will not fit in the cabinet. It is just like 2 inches too tall to actually go in there, so it has to go on top of the bar cabinet. But it's a tall, slender bourbon bottle. It's got a little bit of like a waviness to it at the top there. And it's got like a big, like painted on like horse. It's not like a, it's not a label or a sticker or whatever. It's like when they print right on the glass or whatever. You've probably seen it. It looks like it would just be silly nonsense, but it's actually, quite tasty.
Hmm. Well, that's nice.
Yeah. And you know, Chestnut, probably the horse's name, I imagine.
So there's no Seabiscuit, bourbon.
I don't know. That sounds really gross.
but I didn't receive any booze as a gift, just because I'm traveling on a plane, so it's really not. It doesn't travel super well. But having said that, Jason got two interesting bottles from my friend Jason Ziegler from high school, who gave him. For the purposes of not confusing the two Jasons, I will refer to Jason Ziegler as Ziegler, and I will refer to Jason as Jason, because I do that the rest of the time.
He has been pre-established in this this show as the Jason, the canonical Jason.
Also, I don't want to number people. I feel like people are you know, not numbers; they're free men.
But how do you number two? Like, but by importance, by relative frequency of visiting with them, by who you knew first. Like, yeah, you don't want to get into the whole taxonomy of that.
No, I don't want to rank them. Ziegler had given Jason a bottle of spiced rum from Maggie's Farm in Pittsburgh, and we had a white rum from them previously, and a previous Christmas, from this same distillery, and also a bottle of Falernum that they make themselves. Because as you are aware from an earlier episode that I don't know, I had complained about the John D. Taylor Falernum. There's only like one company that makes Falernum, and it kind of sucks. And so unless you
have... It does sound like phlegm.
Well, unless you have like a really artisanal tiki bar that you're going to where they make their own Falernum, then you're out of luck on that, because I'm not going to make Falernum at home. I'm not that kind of a person. But I'm interested to try both of those, and I want to specifically try them in the Port-au-Prince, which in whatever episode that was previously, I believe I had highlighted as an example of a good cocktail that works well with Falernum. It's a good use case for Falernum. I just like saying it, Falernum.
Yeah, it sounds really gross, actually.
Yes, you've said, I believe, in the past that it sounds like phlegm.
Sounds like Jerry Lewis saying phlegm.
Falernum.
Huh?
So anyway...
It's a good first audio clip to pull for the year.
We'll skip that. This is... I appreciate the last-minute submissions of our listeners for the clip show for The Incomparable, which has aired recently. Mm-hmm. So
we made it in there with... it was a Micah one. Mm-hmm. It was the robotic ureter.
Yes. As could only be expected.
I know it's a clip show, and I know, and the, you know, people have lives to live and things to do, but that clip only got better. Like, I wish it was twice as long, because it kept getting better for a little while.
You wish the robotic ureter was twice as long?
No, I mean, everybody has wishful thinking, whatever. But there were some really good mic clips. I continue to appreciate the Micah Close, particularly the B movie. You know, I know we can't like spoil the sanctity of the member episode by just like putting all of those amazing snippets out into the world. But my God, the fact that there are people out there who have not heard that episode, they are being deprived of some of the greatest podcasting of all time.
Yeah, and if you are listening to this and you have not heard that member episode, you could probably skip to about an hour in, and then you would get, I believe, peak the height of ridiculousness for all of everything that's going on.
I think, I think you need the build because you need the discussion and the world building that comes with our attempt to rationalize and understand the entity that is the B-movie before we go down a very dark road.
Our very painful and slow dissection of every scene inside of the B-movie leading up to.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I also encourage people, if they are not already, to become Incomparable members. I know we have a lot of listeners who like it mainly just to get early access to the raw recordings that we do, as we do a very light touch with editing, and then that way they can just like burn through a queue of things, I guess. But then you get access to the stuff fast when you can't make the live show. And sometimes, if we have not selected a title for an episode, you can always pop on to the Incomparable member Slack and say, "Hey, I listened to that bootleg thing you guys posted, and I like this thing you said, and I would like it to be a title from me." And then we go, "Oh, wow, that's a great suggestion." Or we say, "No, sorry, we already picked something else. You should get to the end of the bootleg." But usually we appreciate feedback rather than not having any feedback. And in some cases, it can be affirming of something we also thought was funny. But these are of course, unsolicited plugs for being a member of the Incomparable Network and selecting the little checkbox that gives us money. For doing this non-ad supported podcast, but
look, there are a lot of great things you get being an Incomparable member. I'm not going to go through the whole list of perks. Like, you can look at that on the Incomparable website, but the number one line item on that list of perks is and forever will be the B movie episode with Micah.
Yeah, and you get access to that even if you weren't a member last year. It's perennial, so foreverable or whatever. Anyway, it's there. So just hop on to theincomparable.com and join and be a member, and then listen to Micah ask if bees have certain anatomical features. And
the question is so earnest and straightforward too. Yeah, I listened to it last week. I'm gonna listen to it again when we're done talking here, just because it's too good. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's enough about our bee anatomies.
Yeah.
How was your break? Your holiday break?
Leading up to Christmas, it feels like there is less time every year. And I know that it seems like Christmas starts earlier, in terms of decorations and music and solicitations and sales that go on seemingly forever, and all of that stuff. But at the same time, you're working and trying to get stuff in order before you leave town, and trying to pack this and do that, and make sure you bank episodes of a show before you leave, so that you have things that will air, hopefully, and not just like nothing for a couple weeks. But we did all that, so I don't really get to appreciate like the lead up to Christmas anymore. And when we got to Tampa, there was like 2 days before Christmas, and we went to a mall and did some last minute shopping. So that was not great. I'm going to say
you did
no
some
to that.
Last minute shopping at a mall in Tampa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That sounds like, I can't think of anything else that would get me in the spirit of the season better than that.
Yeah. There are two malls. We went to both of them. There is International Plaza, which is the fancy mall. That's the one with the horrible Apple store. And there is also the West Shore Plaza, which used to be the fancy mall back when another mall called Tampa Bay Center existed. But they demolished that for football stadium parking. So West Shore Mall is now the not fancy mall, and International Plaza is the fancy mall. And West Shore Plaza has descended further from its fancy status. It has two Lids branded stores inside of it now, which I consider to be a mark against.
Are they at least called like Lids and Lids too?
No, it's Lids, and then whatever their like sports shoe one is, their Foot Locker brand takeoff thing. I don't know. I was just walking past it. Literally, they're in the same like hallway of the mall. You walk past one and it says Lids. You walk past the other one and it says Lids, and you're like, my in the Matrix? Is this a glitch in the Matrix? What's going on?
They both say Lids, but one sells something different than the other?
Yeah, in smaller text underneath one of them, it says that it's the, you know, sports whatever locker shoe thing.
I did not realize that the Lids brand had extended itself that far.
Yep.
They're good. I like the unusual variety of hats that Lids provides, and they even do like custom stitching if you want to get your own custom awful looking hat. But they frequently don't have stuff in my size or a style that I find not garish, so I usually end up over at the Hat Club, which basically just sounds like a store for old men who are losing their hair to cover up their heads, which, I mean, you know, I fit that bill a bit, but
you fit that, you know, hat club.
Yeah, the Hat Club usually has what I'm looking for.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, if they do custom stuff, we should definitely get a Hat Club hat that has the Defocus logo embroidered on it.
I bet they would do that. I don't know. See, the problem with most of these custom hats is I don't know that they do that really nice, like, thick embroidery that, like, an actual baseball hat has. I think it just kind of looks like, you know, someone with a computer attached to a really kind of crappy sewing machine just, like, you know, stitched in a logo there. So I think the density of the fibers would not be satisfactory to our desired logo standards, but we could try.
Yeah,
I'd give it a run. I mean, it's probably still like $40-$50 for a stupid hat, but
Todd gave me an extra Rogue One ILM Crew 2016 hat that has a thingy on it. When he came out to see me when he was, I don't know, VES showing, voting things, I don't know. He's, you know, he's a fancy guy.
He's an Academy member.
Yes. Academy member, Todd Vaziri. Academy member and self-retweeter and Twitter threader, Todd Vaziri. we love Todd.
Really stretches the micro in microblogging, doesn't he?
Yeah, but this hat stretches. That's I think the reason why I like this.
Oh, you get a flex fit.
Yeah, but it's got not the flex fit brand. It just has some stretch to it. It still has like a Velcro thing in the back. If that doesn't stretch far enough, I guess.
So it's like a snapback, but with Velcro, but also stretchy.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yes, and it doesn't have the brand on it, so I don't know what it is. We should inquire with Todd.
Hmm.
But
I don't know, that might be
proprietary ILM
proprietary industry secret that's under NDA. They're very secretive people up there in San Francisco.
Yeah, yeah. But hopefully someday we'll find out. The truth will come out.
You're not much of a hat guy, are you?
No, I'm not much of a hat guy. It's for a similar reason. They don't usually fit my head very well. Yeah. And I also think that I don't always look the best in them. I always feel like I have it on slightly crooked, or
I frequently have mine on crooked, and I always put it on with the with one particular hand, so the bill over time will get like slightly bent on that side where my hand grabs it, so I have to kind of like bend it back so it's flat again. But I'm all in on the hats for a variety of reasons.
Oh, you like a flat brim?
No, not flat, but like even from left to right.
Okay.
Like normally like one side will be like angled down a little bit more than the other. Like it's like the cardboard is actually bent down a little bit.
Okay, I just wasn't sure if this was like one of those like Volcom RVCA things, but
no, I'm not flipping the bill of my hat upside down or whatever, like a metal militia guy or something.
Yeah, no. I am jealous of people who can pull off a good hat. Cuz there are people who, and I know it's a common cliche, as you pointed out, that some people who have hair stuff like most men do, that they will get hats and wear them all the time.
Yeah,
but then there's other people who have luxurious, wonderful hair, but still wear hats, and they look great in the hats. And I'm just like, you jerk! Like you like 1% of the population of the world. Like, how dare you?
Yeah, the key I think at this age for me, and probably maybe for you, is to not care what you look like in the hat. So much. Make sure it's on straight, and then forget it's there because it's covering up, in my case, some unfortunate poofy hair. But I do get jealous of the good hat wearers, people, because, you know, like you remember when people wore backwards hats? Like, that was a thing, and some people can still do that. But I think when I put on my hat backwards, I look like a bearded I look like a bearded egg wearing an edge hat from U2, because you can't see the bill anymore behind my bulbous head, so it looks like I'm just wearing a very tight wool beanie on my very large head, and it is very unbecoming. So I can only wear the hat directly straight forward.
I look like a bearded egg.
Wearing an edge beanie.
Wearing an edge beanie. Okay. Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah.
It's not a good look, suffice it to say.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think I similarly, I also don't think that I look particularly good with a backwards hat on. I think it doesn't necessarily like sit on the head right. Like, I don't know what about it is about the shape. It just like gets poofy.
Yeah, the only way it works is if you get one of the snapbacks with a little opening on the front there, and then you have some like fun, floofy hair that you can like poke through it or whatever, like a surfer kid. But I wear like fitted baseball hats like the players wear, so it's just like it's a solid piece of wool with a little MLB logo on it if I put it on backwards, and it's not a good look.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it's a good look for anybody.
Anyway, I got a new hat for Christmas. It's nice.
what kind of hat?
It's not the Cleveland hat, like the one that I had previously worn, except this one is just black and white instead of blue and red.
Oh.
So I look forward to my previous Cleveland hat, which is just the new Cleveland baseball team's logo, which is just the red C. Basically, everyone who walked past me said, is that a Chicago Cubs hat? And I said, no. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me? It doesn't even look like the Cubs logo. Now I look forward to getting even more questions about whether or not it's, I don't know, Chicago White Sox.
Well,
or something, because
I think the solution to that would be to get a hat with the team's logo on it.
That is the team's logo. It's
the letter C.
It's the letter C. Yes, that is their current logo. It's a white C on a black hat now instead of a red C on a blue hat.
Oh, well, aren't the Cubs colors red and blue? If I remember correctly, from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
It's a different red and a different blue, and it's also a different shaped C, and it's iconic, and the Cleveland C is like 4 years old, so should be kind of obvious that it's not a Cubs hat, but whatever.
Sorry. Well, fine. I mean, does it shine? Does it have some bling?
It's not a bling. I pulled all the stickers off. Sorry, everyone who likes to leave the big New Era sticker on the bill with the size. It's mostly out of embarrassment because I wear a hat size that is very large, and it is frequently out of stock in a lot of places, so I don't want people to know how big my head is, even though they could just look and be like, wow, it's a really big head.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can understand.
I still like my 20th anniversary Diamondbacks hat because it's purple and teal and a little bit of copper color, and it's very nice.
Mm-hmm. Dan, is your phone on Do Not Disturb by any chance?
No, I saw your photo. It's okay. Terrifying.
I just wanted to make sure. See, no, that's why I can't wear the hat backwards like that.
Well, you can. You got the little surfer flip that comes through. Just don't make that face, basically.
No, well, the face was to distract from the bad hat.
Is it the Rogue One hat? Is that what that says right there?
Yes. That does say ILM crew. So it's a lie as well. Because
very impressive though. They don't just give those out to anybody.
No.
I have to minimize this. This is terrifying.
Yes.
No, I'm on my Macintosh computer here. Your face popped up directly in front of me.
Oh wow, that must have been huge on your iMac computer.
It's a solid 5-inch head size.
It's a what, Dan?
It's nothing. Oh, God. Why do I talk to you?
I don't know. Anyway, so Christmas was stressful, and I love my family, but stressful. And then after Christmas Eve dinner, there was a Christmas Day event, and then there was a Christmas with my dad event, and then there was a couple days of running around to meet various people who were in town because they were seeing their families, including, of course, Ziegler. Then I met up with my dad. Then I met up with my uncle and other uncle and a whole bunch of other extended families, and my niece and my, I don't know, second cousin? How does this work? My cousin's son. Second cousin? Is that how that works?
That might your cousin's son. That might be like a great nephew or something. But yeah, you can just go a second. I don't know.
It doesn't matter to me.
Once you get the cousin, the ancestry thing just kind of like puns, and it's like, yeah, they're second, third cousins.
Yeah. So I just the important part here is there are two small children, and my niece hasn't learned how to share yet, so they wanted to do everything the same. But it would be like there's only one of that thing. So there was some crying and screaming, but everything worked out really well. We managed the situation, and then Jason and I went to New Orleans for New Year's again. Last year.
Did you see Hoobastank or whatever again?
No,
was
no.
It last time?
It was Imagine Dragons last year.
Imagine Dragons, yeah.
Yeah, this year it was Florida-Georgia Line. And
oh, yeah, I've heard of them.
I don't know. Who's the country singer lady who does the something in my Mercedes whatever thing? Jason likes it, and I don't remember her name. It starts with an M. Doesn't matter.
You know, one thing I've recently realized is that despite the fact that country music is very pro, you know, pickup truck and what have you, a lot of them sing about Mercedes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Just peculiar.
Except for the little red wagon lady. You know, I don't think she's so well off. She's not flaunting anything with that.
I don't know what the hell you're talking about, but okay, I assume that's a reference.
Yes, it is. I can guarantee it is. And I can guarantee I also would not know that reference if I didn't have a boyfriend who loves country music. Mm-hmm. But... Have you gone on a car trip with anyone who likes country music and has it on their phone and has a very short playlist of about 20 to 30 songs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My wife is big into the country music, but she is also equally, if not more, into a brand of hip hop that is not something that I choose to listen to frequently. But so she's about half and half. Between the two, and I can tolerate some of the country music, and I can tolerate some of the hip hop music, but I definitely cannot tolerate all of either.
Well, it's just that she's a little bit country and you're a little bit rock and roll, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, I don't know. rock and roll doesn't exist anymore, does it?
I don't know. I'm sure that there is some 19, 20 year old who's like, I'm making my rock and roll band that's a throwback to the blah 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 times because I you know, think that everything now is stupid, just like every other 19 to 20 year old person who has a band. But
I just opened my Apple Music here to see what the last song I downloaded was, and out of sheer embarrassment I'm going to admit this to you. I was watching I watched a bunch of movies over the break too, and the end credits I think it was MacGruber. Have you seen MacGruber?
No, why would I do that?
it's ridiculous in a kind of funny way, but the end credits of MacGruber features a little song called Love is a Wonderful Thing by Michael Bolton, and it made me laugh so hard that I'm like, you know what, I remember that song, I'm downloading it right now.
Oh man.
Yeah,
no thank you. But last year in New Orleans, it was 28 degrees, but not wet and raining. So it was very freezing, and I wasn't prepared, and I didn't have enough jackets and thick jackets and sweaters and stuff. And so I was just dying from that. And we would just like basically walk around and go from place to place, take all of the various layers of sweaters off, and then sit there for one cocktail, and then put all the various layers of sweaters back on, and then go have something full of cholesterol. But this year it was a humid, very balmy and raining, like 75 degrees. So,
oh, wow.
Yes, I was not prepared. You literally could have worn shorts on many of the days. The first day we got there, it was like 68 or something, so it was fine still. But I don't know what happened, and it was just like foggy and gross and weird. But you know, we tried different restaurants this time. We had some good stuff. Lots and lots of cholesterol.
I saw some Instagram stories of various foods.
Yes, well, follow
funny looking foods.
You follow my boyfriend, who, if anyone here would really like to see mostly what I'm eating, I don't order all the same dishes. you can just follow my boyfriend's Instagram and look at all of his stories, and it's always photos of like almost every dish that we have at the table.
It was good. Looked nice. Yeah. There was even a photo of you smiling in there, so you must have been having a good time.
Yes. And not at all like a strange smile for any reason.
I mean, you had your sort of typical Joe Steele deer in the headlights eyeballs, but you actually had a smile on your face too. So.
Yes. Well, but, you know, I had a good time, and the hotel we stayed at, unfortunately, was not as nice as the one from last year, which is weird because last year was a Homewood Suites and this year was an Intercontinental, so I don't know what happened. But yeah. But
it's almost like brands are a false construct.
You're a false construct.
Wake up, sheeple. You're in the Matrix.
Yeah, no, but after Jason got into a little bit of a Twitter argument about our check-in time with the brand.
He argued with them on Twitter?
Yeah, he did the classic period at brand name.
Oh, how did I miss that? I follow him.
Yeah, I don't know. He doesn't tweet very often, so probably got lost in the noise because I'm sure you're busy. I was busy.
Oh, I'm reading it right now.
Yeah. Don't read it on air. It's kind of embarrassing. It was.
Oh God, he name checked the manager.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh boy.
Not well.
Did he receive restitution is what I would like to know.
Well, we were offered a free breakfast buffet.
I was going to say, did they give you like a free warm cookie when you checked in or something?
No, that was the compensation was a free breakfast buffet thing. But we are in New Orleans, so we want to have like real food.
Did you tell them where they could stick their powdered eggs?
No, as of right now, there are no additional hidden fees or charges that have appeared, and nothing bad has happened. So, it's fine. Basically, he canceled a future reservation, but with them, he really did. Like some people are like, "I'm threatening to never use you again," and they still use the company. No, not Jason. Burn to the ground, salt the earth. You're done for. You're dead to him.
For a man of such strong conviction, I'm amazed that he continues to chat with me on the internet. That's great. I'm better than this hotel brand.
Yeah, well, he likes you, and you like old Mercedes cars, and
hell yeah,
and pugs. So those are your redeeming qualities.
I follow so many pugs and so many vintage Mercedes Instagrams right now. It's not even good.
Then we got in last night, and I went to work, and then I was just like, why? I want to go back on vacation. But how was your thing? Because you don't have to travel anywhere, so it's just all the your immediate family that lives very close.
This holiday season was surprisingly low key, I guess, in some good ways / some annoying ways. Anyway, we were supposed to go back to Ohio for a week, which is 6 days longer than anyone should be in Ohio. But for a variety of reasons, we had to cancel the trip. But my mom still went to go see my grandma, which, you know, bummer we didn't get to see her until she got back. We saw her right before as well. But we had, you know, Christmas over at my wife's parents' house. I saw my aunt a little bit because she's still recovering from her hip surgery. And other than that, we laid pretty low and did far too many personal errands and appointments over our... I mean, she had... Amanda had like 11 days off or something, and there was basically like a day and a half of rest, and the rest was just like go, 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 go craziness. But it was good. It was not crazy high pressure to like dart from house to house to house trying to go see people. And even fake doctor cousin who was in town way up there in Scottsdale... you know, they were having a low key thing with only a couple people, so it was no big deal that we were too wiped out to go drive all the way up there for no reason whatsoever, even though I love my family and I like seeing them all the time. Don't you believe me, right? Anyway, it was good. It was nice. We kind of got to do stuff on our own terms this break, and it was very, very busy, but it was good.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice. I drank a lot. I drank a lot of alcohol.
Oh, I may be guilty as charged of that as well.
Mm-hmm. I drank a lot of horrible things. What was the last thing I told you I drank? I was drinking like Swiss Miss powdered hot cocoa with Irish whiskey in it. I had a couple of those. I also got some packets of what do you call it? Like the apple cider packets.
Apple cider packets.
You know, it's like little powder stuff that you put boiling water and it turns into like hot apple cider. It's terrible.
That sounds revolting. Why not just get apple cider and then heat it up?
Well, because, I mean, I basically did like a 60-40 mix of this powdered apple cider and spiced rum, and it was real good. Because, oh, that was the other thing. We went to the Phoenix Desert Botanical Gardens, because they do, you know, it's a very pretty garden in the first place with all of the desert stuff, which is actually kind of attractive. But they do all these crazy, like, light shows and flickery stuff that's timed to music, and this thing called Electric Desert, which was really cool, and they had another thing, Luminaria thing, going on at the same time. It was really fun. But they also had, you know, they know their audience, so you can get like an $8 alcoholic, barely alcoholic beverage, festive beverage. So you can get like a peppermint schnapps and a hot cocoa kind of thing, or that's where I got the idea for the apple cider and rum thing. And I was like, oh yeah, we got a bunch of rum at home, and I don't really drink rum in the first place, so let's do some hot apple cider rum stuff. So I carried that tradition home with us after the event out there.
Okay. Well, you need to get in touch with Jason, because he has an apple cider rum cocktail hack, which is you go to your Trader Joe's and you get the I believe it's a Fuji apple spiced cider in the refrigerated section, like where they have the little carrot juice bottles.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have it in stock, there's going to be like 80 of them. And if they've run out, there's zero. So those are the two states that I've seen it in. And you get that and you mix it with some, you need a lemon juice, fresh lemon. Don't be a jerk and get that horrible little bottle. It looks like a cartoon lemon. Totally different taste. And then you get your rum and I forget what else is in it. But you basically just mix these things together, and you serve it neat, chilled up.
Hmm. I could do that. We actually right around Thanksgiving, I bought a jug of, I don't know, it's like apple cider or whatever. And I there was on the end cap of the packet of mulling spices, so I was gonna like, oh, I'm gonna make some mulled apple cider stuff or whatever, and I never did. Ended up just drinking like most of the jug by itself, and now I have a packet of mulling spices for no reason. But I still have some of that, so I could heat that up, and that would actually be better than the powdered packet of nonsense. But the packet worked well to adding a little bit of warm apple zing to the rum that I have no desire to drink in any other fashion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I like rum in things, but I don't. I mean, I know there are sipping rums.
Tiki drinks.
Yeah, I know there are sipping rums that you can have, but I've there's not one that I've tried that I haven't been like, this is just too sweet.
Yeah, the rum old fashions we had at our one and only meetup ever were pretty good, but other than that, yeah, like I typically, again, as noted by my drink of choice, the room temperature whiskey in a glass. Like when I find like a little drink hack like this that makes it easy for me to enjoy drinking a beverage that I don't typically drink, whether it be rum or in a previous instance, gin, I usually just like go nuts on that until that bottle is gone and then I don't have to think about it ever again. So like I had a basically full bottle of gin that I never drank because I don't really drink a ton of gin, but then I was getting there was like a deal on the Pellegrino, what do you call it, the Limonata one or whatever. I'm like, oh yeah, I'll just do like some equal parts lemon fizzy soda and gin, and it was delicious and did the job real well. Hmm. So I'm gonna do the powdered apple cider thing until the rum is gone, and then I'll go back to my usual.
Ew. But there's one wintry cocktail that I tried when I was in New Orleans that I actually kind of liked. Because I don't know, cocktails, it's like every place has their own like signature thing that they want to try to do, and they'll have like a seasonal whatever it is, and they'll be like, okay, that's nice, I'm not gonna go home and make one. But
these wintry festive drinks that like they stick a sprig of what's the horrible spice that they always like start sticking in there, like thyme or something in there, that's just like way too strong. Like get a whiskey cocktail with a bay leaf in it or something. Like this, you've just ruined a perfectly good drink by sticking vegetation in here, but thank you. It's very festive and very unique.
Yeah, well, there was one restaurant we went to in New Orleans where I had a cocktail that I had ordered that came with dill, which is it was very unusual. It was like served in a Nick and Nora glass, which is kind of like that curved tapered martini glass, where it's sort of like a cross between a wine glass and a martini glass. So it's just like a little thing of reddish brown liquid, and then like I don't know, a big old sprigadill just floating in there.
It wasn't like a what do you call it, Bloody Mary? There weren't any pickles in it or anything.
No. It was a clearish brown thing. Yeah, but anyway, the winter cocktail that I was getting at that I liked was from the Arnaud's French 75 bar, which is famous for the French 75 cocktail. But
that's a dangerous cocktail, my friend.
I find it can be a little too sweet. In most preparations.
It can, but if you get it prepared nicely, you'll drink 30 of them and then have a real bad next morning.
Yeah, that's because of all the sugar. But the one that I got there, knowing that I don't really actually like the French 75 at the French 75 bar, was the Winter Waltz. And that's 2 ounces of rye, 1/2 ounce of Verna, 1/4 ounce St. Elizabeth Allspice Dram, and 2 dashes of Dale DeGroff's Allspice Bitters, and then you garnish it with a star anise pod that you put in the top.
Oh, you sent a photo of that, and that was very cute. That there was you got a little star anise floating around in your drink there. It's nice.
Yeah. It was very nice. It was festive without being like, you know, an enormous cinnamon stick swizzle or you know, dill. But that was a good thing. And but I like of course, you know, allspice, cardamom. Those sorts of things, of course, things that would seemingly have a similar flavor profile to falernum. But your favorite thing that doesn't at all sound like phlegm.
What does falernum taste like?
Clove and allspice, I think, would be maybe how I would describe that. I forget everything, and there's just like some ginger maybe in it. I forget the ingredient list for falernum. It is very strange.
It contains flavors of almond, ginger, lime, and sometimes vanilla, cloves, and allspice.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's Caribbean drinks, typically.
It's from Barbados.
I feel like I've had this, except I can't think of when. Was this in any of the crap that we drank at the tiki bar here? The tiki bar underneath the abandoned auto repair shop?
It very well could have been, but I don't know. We were watching Jason put on Chopped after we got off the airplane yesterday. Just, I don't know, settle our nerves.
Your time starts now.
But yeah, we put on Chopped, and one of the, all the contestants were bartenders, mixologists, whatever. But they were from various places, and one of them was from the one we went to with you in Arizona. And,
oh, really?
Do you want me to tell you if he won or not, or do you want to not be spoiled?
I'm going to guess he lost.
Spoiler alert. Everyone fast forward 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
He in fact, won.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
That's impressive. See, there was a fella from North Scottsdale on an old episode of Cutthroat Kitchen. And he was just—he was like 22 years old and entirely too cocky and kind of annoying. He lost, I believe, and I was very happy about that.
You just want to see people from around you lose.
I mean, generally, yeah. I feel like the more people around me that lose, it's sort of like, you know,
doesn't
really raise my stock per se, but you know, in contrast, I look.
Well, that's acceptable. That's that famous saying, a falling tide raises all boats.
A falling tide lowers all boats slightly proportionately to each other or something. I don't know.
A falling tide makes the dock look taller.
A falling tide makes the whole world blind, I think is how it actually goes.
Tived for a tide. Anywho, that's they're good cocktails. I like a good tiki cocktail. As I've noted, sugar is a dangerous thing, and
you know it doesn't have a lot of sugar in it.
Just having bourbon in a glass.
Bourbon in a glass.
But yeah. Speaking of, I also had a Sazerac when we went over to the Sazerac bar in the Roosevelt Hotel. As one does when they're in New Orleans, the famous cocktail.
That's not the Roosevelt in L.A. there.
No, because it turns out you can just name lots of things after dead presidents. But the the bar itself is nice. It's always overly full with people. And because it's a Waldorf Astoria hotel, they're always way better dressed than you are. So you don't feel at all intimidated. Also, the drinks are so expensive. But we had...
What's the Sazerac go for in a place like that?
I honestly don't remember. I think my drink was probably close to $20-something for Good the Sazerac. It was way more than that should have been. You know, they do the little absinthe, like, spritz in the glass, and they put the stuff in, and then they do the little lemon twist.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the benefit, if you're going to have a $20 cocktail, Sazerac's a good one to have because, you know, you're not wasting any dollars on terrible mix-ins. It's all alcohol.
Yeah, well, also the finest quality lemons, I'm sure. But but that night we wanted to go. This is the first night we got there. We wanted to go over to the French 75 bar because we just wanted to hit that before we went to our restaurant reservation and just get that off the list. But we walked over there and turns out they were closed for a private event that night. So we went to the French 75 later in the week, but, for this particular night, we're like, oh no, what do we do? And we did the same thing we did last year, which is there's a Ritz-Carlton. It's very nice and it always has a seat and the service is fantastic and it's not famous for anything at all. So no one cares
except their crackers.
Yes. Well, we didn't have the crackers. We had, they fry their own potato chips in house and they also had I don't know. It was like a caramelized smoked onion dip for the potatoes that you could dunk in, like a very, very fancy French onion dip. So we had that and another round of Sazerac, and I think Jason had something that was like a raisin 43. I don't know what it is, but
that's not a drink.
No, it was one of their seasonal things, and it was very. I don't know how to describe it. You know that raisiny quality, like grape juice doesn't taste the same as a raisin, etc. Like it has like that pruniness to it.
Yeah, it's like the flavor minus the sweetness with a little bit of bitterness in there.
Well, it has sweetness. It's just it has, I don't know, that dry aged like vanilla bean kind of a thing going. Anyway, so he got that and he was enamored with it, and I took a sip and I thought it was the most disgusting thing I ever had. But that was a life hack, because if you go there and you have the Sazerac and you don't have it at the Sazerac bar, it costs half as much, even though it's a Ritz-Carlton. So
I feel like a good Sazerac is probably still going to be $12 basically anywhere you go.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's, you know, $10 cheaper than going to the Sazerac bar. But, you know, you got to go to the Sazerac bar to say you did it, I guess. But
I just like Sazeracs. There are not a lot of places that even bother trying to make them around here.
Well, I mean, I think it's really a very popular New Orleans thing. I just don't think it's very popular outside of New Orleans.
I mean, it's you know, a ye olde fashioned cocktail that people who are snooty about cocktails should be familiar with.
Yeah, but you have to be going to a bar where they're going to have the little spray bottle for the absinthe rinse that they're going to do.
Spray bottle, that's cheating. You're supposed to put in like a little spoonful and like swirl it around in the glass.
Well, I'll let you in on a little secret about how the official Sazerac bar does it.
I call nonsense.
They have a little like tiny travel spray spritzer with absinthe in it, and then they just hit the inside of the thing. Also, absinthe isn't really absinthe anymore.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, it looks like pucker or something. It's just bright green liquid.
Well, just licorice flavored liqueur. but they no longer make it with wormwood. It doesn't drive you insane. You are not a very sophisticated French artist or poet. But
We can't be, because we don't have hallucinogenic absinthe.
Yes.
Think of all the great art we've been deprived of through regulation.
Oh, man. If only...
When they talk about deregulating things, they should really be deregulating absinthe and then, like, literally nothing else.
Sure. Go for it. Run on that platform in Arizona, and I bet you would win.
you know, we'll make it a balancing act. We'll remove some regulation from the absinthe, then we'll take that regulation and add it back to something else. So we have an equal number of regulations. We're just moving around a little bit.
Just be regulation neutral.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's just a, you know, just like a cap and trade. It's just...
Yeah, supply and demand. It's just, you know, you trade some absinthe for some police officers or whatever, drug sniffing dogs or something. I don't know, whatever the hell we need here.
Yeah. All of the above, because I believe you told me you had some police activity in your neighborhood.
So much police activity.
Mm.
Helicopters. We counted 11 SUVs speeding the opposite direction as we were leaving our neighborhood, which is a lot of SUVs for the sub neighborhood of Ahwatukee that we live in. Given that it doesn't actually even have like a full fledged police station in it, it just kind of has like a little place where they can park some undercover cars.
Yeah, well, that. I wonder if it was something serious. Did you find out in the local news? Did the paper run anything?
Did the Facebook on our way
page
back,
that constitutes a paper?
Yeah,
run
for
anything?
Real. Like the page that had the most information was a Nextdoor thread and a local Facebook group. No, I don't think the official story has come out yet. There were a lot of rumors that are not worth really repeating, but it was, I guess, I don't know, must have been serious. All we heard from the police guy on the Nextdoor thread is that no crime was committed. They just needed a bunch of police locking down neighborhoods, walking around with assault rifles and helicopters shouting at people to go back in their homes. When we were on our way back to the house, we followed the ABC 15 news van past the local park where they were storing some of the extra cars that they no longer needed. Presumably somebody's got some information somewhere. They just haven't released any of it.
You should ask those hard-hitting questions.
Really should. Yeah, I should go be a news anchor.
Yeah, should get a camera, get in their faces. Sir, excuse me.
why are you dodging our questions, sir? Is it true what they say about you?
I feel like there's an opening there for local news.
No, I worked in local news briefly and it was terrible.
I didn't even know that.
Oh yeah, I was a night shift editor when I got out of film school before I got the intel job. I feel like I told you this. I did all of the 10, 15, 30 and 60 second promos for all of the syndicated shows. Basically you would get a Beta SP tape from the show, and then we would put the little tag at the end, so it would be like a 30-second clip on today's episode of Oprah, and then at the end I would add the little graphic that goes tonight at 7, and then I would kick that out to the Telestream system and that would run on the air. And I made 6 versions of everything every single day for whatever episode of Frasier or Friends was airing that day. I sat alone on an entire floor of the office building because nobody else was there at nighttime, and I meandered about. I had a very, very old Avid, and not a bad gig. I think they paid something like $30 an hour just to like wander around and screw with the Avid.
Well, see if they have a job opening.
No, I don't want to do that.
You'll find it creatively rewarding.
I don't want to go sit in the dark for 10 hours a day in downtown Phoenix by myself for $30 an hour. Sorry, I know. Millennials were ruining things by not taking the hard opportunities.
Millennials are killing syndicated ad spot jobs.
Millennials are killing the bag and tag. They gotta be able to automate that crap. Now, I could probably write a keyboard maestro macro that would do half that job on its own.
Mostly it's just about taking whatever the text is and then just sticking it on there. And
and most of that stuff was already created. You just had to like line it up and kick it out. And you know, I was terrible at it too, because I was supposed to, they would give me all these horrible beta tapes and I was supposed to take them back down to the tape room so they could be erased and reused, and I would always forget, because my shift ended at like 4 in the morning, to take them back down. And I would always get yelled at by the old guy who ran the tape ops down there. He's like, you never bring your tapes back. I'm like, oh yeah, my bad, sorry, I'll do that next time. And I would just never do it.
Well, that's sad. I'm sure they don't. Do you think they actually have tape ops anymore?
Yes, I feel like they do.
Okay.
Just because they had cabinets upon cabinets of, you know, 10, 30, 60 second trailers for all of these old shows that they're still running.
Yeah, that's true. Because my school had a Digibeta deck in one of those like tower things where you put the stuff in. You know what I'm talking about?
The tower things?
I don't know. The enclosure where the deck actually was, like, rack-mounted.
Yeah, like a rack mount, like a machine room kind of
thing. Yeah, yeah. And there were two of those, and each of them had, like, a couple of things in the rack mount, but, like, the rest of the rack mount was empty. I'm not sure why that was, other than somebody didn't want to, like, crouch down or something. But they were hooked up to computers with Windows 2000 Professional that had... I think it was like Targa 3000 or Targa 5000 something branded graphics cards that had memory to load all of the Targa files that you needed for output so that you could play, you could output in real time when the tape would start, which is just like the sort of fascinating thing that you don't think about. Like, as somebody who works with digital stuff, you're just like, what do you mean I need to like cache this so that it goes at the same speed so that it can be recorded to revolving tape? But that's what you needed back in the day, back in the old days.
Time was.
Yeah.
I remember doing all kinds of horrible hacks like that to get stuff off of a computer onto a tape. Like there was an old HP computer I had back when I in high school, or what, I might even have been middle school, I would make like movie trailers for movies that we were never actually going to make. The only way to get them back out to DV tape so I could like show them to people, or I don't know, maybe it was to get the, no, it was to get it back out to the tape. You'd plug the FireWire into the computer, and the FireWire camera would basically just end up mirroring the desktop. So you would just full screen your video and hide your start bar. And then hit record on the camera and hit play on your computer. But the problem is, like, there was always, like, 3 pixels at the bottom of the screen where you could see the start menu because you could never, like, fully hide it. So a lot of my trailers had, like, this little white bar at the bottom where you could see the Windows XP or whatever, Windows 2000 start menu.
Is that the stuff you're trying to get off of your FireWire stuff these days?
No. I have finally solved the technical difficulties and issues surrounding capturing all of my old tapes. Now I just need to, you know, spend 2 weeks capturing a couple hundred tapes.
Two weeks?
I have probably 150 mini DV tapes that need to get captured.
Oh, what? What?
You know, there's what? There's the student projects. There's all of the sport events that I played that are on there. There are just all sorts of things that need to get digitized, and then these tapes need to be thrown away.
Okay, well, Dan, there's a service I don't remember.
I'm not giving these to other people to deal with.
Okay.
First of all, nobody needs to see them. And second of all, some of these things, I need to make sure that they don't get ruined.
Oh. So it's not for, like, intimate reasons.
No, it's not very intimate. I mean, it's personal because they're like my life memories or whatever, but
yeah.
I can't mail them off into the world.
Okay. Yeah, there's a company I've heard of advertised that I can't remember the name of, where you basically like send them a box of VHS, mini DV, whatever, and then they just do it all for you and then send you back the stuff as digital stuff when you have it.
Yeah.
But I guess you're too much of a control freak. I am.
I mean, I feel like I'm not, I shouldn't be a control freak just because I'm trying to plug a camera into a computer and capture video. Like, that should be, this is a solved thing that we figured out how to do years ago.
No, I'm not talking about the act of doing it. I'm talking about the time frame of doing it.
The part where you spend
2 weeks of your life slowly recording this stuff.
You know, you hit a button, and then an hour later, you come back, you swap a tape, you hit the button again, and then you go back to whatever you were doing.
Okay.
You know, unless there are time code breaks, in which case it stops and you have to pick it back up. And or in the case of this first tape that I tried, some sort of time code issue where Premiere captures it all and then says, no, this clip only has audio. So you got to figure out why it did that. But at least it's ingesting things.
Rob Bredow, the former CTO of ImageWorks and the VFX supervisor on Solo, and I forget what his current title is at ILM, but he's a head honcho, smarty pants guy. He had a thing he had tweeted a while ago about fixing time codes on the computer for stuff he was capturing. So you may want to go find out whatever that was that he was tweeting about, because you may be in a situation where you need to fix time codes.
Yeah, typically the easiest solution is to capture the video and audio and disable the time code so the time code doesn't match, but you're never going to like try and link the two back up because it's not an actual video project. So you just don't, you just let the computer regen the time code as it goes, and then it won't freak out when there's some inconsistencies on the tape. But that's also just kind of like, it's the same sort of thing. It's hit and play in one place and record on the other place where they're not really talking to each other, even though they're a digital interface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have my Digibeta tape with my student projects on it.
Because we were good luck with that.
Yeah, that's not that. There's nothing to do with that one. We were required to output everything to Digibeta, standard def Digibeta, because mm-hmm.
it's a great format. The decks are probably all.
It's not a great format,
gone.
Dan.
Compared to Beta SP, it was a great format.
They're not square pixels. It's NTSC.
Right, yes. Yeah, sure.
So, and for listeners who don't know, back in the olden days, your stuff that would go on the TV was not a square pixel, meaning it was distorted in one direction. It wasn't the same in X and Y. So that's fun. You also had frame rate stuff, because TVs could only do 30 frames per second. And my teacher that I had, my instructor, the head of computer animation, felt that things looked better when they were done 24 frames per second, and then you did the pull down so that it would be 30 frames per second for your video output. So we also did that. So there are interlaced in between weird frames and stuff with the 3:2 pull down. And our workflow was to use the license of Shake 2.5, I think, for the 3:2 pulldown, because he felt that was the best for the pulldown.
Was he giving you some bullcrap about filtering algorithms or something for your 3:2 pulldown?
I don't believe we had an explanation, but apparently that was just the best tool is what it was described as. So that was part of the workflow.
That's not a thing that... It's a standard. It just interlaces. It shouldn't make a difference how you do
it. No, well, I was not in a position to argue with the head of computer animation back in the day, but he also had some other weird opinions. Like, he had he had a rim light that he had, but it was based on normals on the object. It wasn't an actual light, so it was for like it was a Maya shading hack, basically. You would put this light somewhere around the edge of your character, and it would illuminate a straight line all the way around. It's like, oh, it's great for turntables and stuff like that. And it's like, yeah, but it doesn't look like lighting. And if you turned on the shadows, it did the weirdest stuff, because it was, again, not an actual light, just doing like weird normals, like stuff like a fake Fresnel thing, like those X-ray shaders. But only on one edge, basically. And so it was just like, it was just a total mess. That was a really weird program. And it really taught you that you just follow whatever it is your boss says and you do it.
No, you're supposed to argue with him.
No, because this is how I've gone so far in my career, where I'm a senior compositor for television. Programs that you just do whatever it is your boss says, and everything's fine.
Can you just match the retime that the assistant editor put in there and just be done with it?
Oh my god, Dan, I'm gonna talk. people,
aren't you happy to be back at work?
No, okay, listeners, you don't understand this, but there are editors and assistant editors, and they work on the client side, and sometimes they'll just do stuff that they think looks good, they don't run it past anyone. No one seems to care. But they're high enough on the list of people that we need to please that we actually need to do whatever it is that they do. So they'll be like, you know, there's too much of a pause in the timing on this actor's movement when they're talking to this other character. And they'll literally drop like 10 frames. And you'll just be like, okay. And you'll have to match exactly their timing. And they'll be like, match exactly the offline timing. It'll be the note you get back from them. You send it to them again, and they're like, nope, it looks too stop and start, too herky-jerky. Smooth it out. So you smooth it out, and you send it back. And of course, it doesn't match what it was that they sent for the timing, but who cares at that point? Because you just needed to do exactly what they wanted the first time, and then do what they really wanted the second time. And it's a very efficient workflow.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because, you see, the editor gets to be like, yeah, you matched exactly what I did. I control you, puppet. And then it goes up the chain to people who actually want to look at it. And they're like, oh, wait, no, that doesn't look very good. And editors are also the people who are like, here are three takes. I want to soft split them all together. And it's like, why? Why do you want to do that? Like, I like this performance like 10% better than that other performance. So now it's a VFX mm-hmm. shot. And it needs to be degrained, stabilized, retimed, cropped. My favorite is when they don't want it to be cropped, and it's just like, well, tough noogies. You didn't do this with like a motion control camera. Like it's just going to be cropped because we have no more data.
Drag it in.
Yeah, there was one time I did have to reconstruct the edge of the frame because they didn't want to crop in on something. Fortunately, the actor's head didn't go over it, but that also meant that my VFX side didn't argue that we couldn't do it, or it was a ridiculous request. But anyway, that kind of stuff happens all the time, and it's all the editor's fault. And they just sit there in front of the Avid all day, just cranking it around, going, hey, you know what? Soft mat. Let's just do that.
I have done a lot of that horrible garbage, too. The fun ones are... I've mixed heads and bodies from the same actor in takes because
why
again? Because somebody liked the facial performance that didn't match a body. It came out fine. You can't really tell. I mean, you might be able to tell, but
Frankenstein was the name of the editor. This is not appropriate. You're not allowed to do that, Dan.
I did. Yeah. You've probably seen the video too, and you haven't called me out on it, so maybe you didn't notice.
Well, see, that's the brilliant thing. Is no one will call you out on it if it doesn't actually like look bad, which is the goal. There is one case where in the finished final product, I was like, this still looks like horrible. And I knew that behind the scenes, they spent like weeks, months working on this thing. But that was only one specific case, and I can't call that out because that would not be kind to people. But most of the time, it winds up looking okay. It's just like a bunch of wasted time to get it to that point. And you have to be able to evaluate, like, was this worth my time? Or was this not, like, as big of a fish to fry as I thought it was when I was sitting there only looking at this one shot on loop?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the...
really comes down to time management.
Yeah, the tightened timelines on a lot of delivery things are such that one of the things that I frequently run into is you do a bunch of work and then you get a bunch of notes that would have been really useful before you did that work. So basically then you not only do you have to redo the work with the new direction in mind, you basically kind of have to half undo what you already did. So it basically takes you 2.5 times as long to do it as it should have taken in the first place. And then, you know, it's fine.
My favorite is when... you have done what they wanted, and they've gone through a notes process, and then they show it to the person up the chain from them, and then they hate it, and they want to go back. But because it's being filtered through that first person in the process, they are only giving you the minimum number of notes that they feel like need to be addressed, not the general sense of that there was a change in direction. So you'll just get piecemeal notes about different things to change, and eventually by the end of it, it's like I basically gutted and rejiggered this entire thing, but I was afraid of deleting anything, so it's all splodged all over this comp on the side just in case I needed to like put it back in. because they just wanted to do everything one at a time. So that is my favorite, because it's just like, could you just remove your ego in the chain, in the client chain, and just like pass through the actual note from the person who will approve this shot, and then we'll get that done, and not just like try to filter it so that you can get as much of whatever it was you wanted through, because at the end of the day, that person isn't calling the shot, and the game of telephone that we're playing doesn't actually help anyone because we've gone way over budget. But they don't care because we're on a fixed bid.
Yeah, that's no reason to worry then.
No, but, oh, you know, we should probably talk about something happy, though.
Hmm. Like what?
Well...
Sounded like you had a topic in mind.
Well, it's not politics, but well, the happy thing that I would like to talk about, I was just remembering when I was complaining about how horrible it is to work for various things, is that my former employer and many of the people I used to work with put out a new movie from the last time we recorded that I saw, called Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which I know you haven't seen.
I have not seen it yet. Everyone continues to rave about it, so I guess I have to go see it.
Yeah, you do. And go see it in the theater before it goes out of the theater. It's going to go out soon because Aquaman is pushing it out because everybody wants to watch Aquaman for reasons that are not clear to me. But Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse was surprising because when I saw the trailer, I thought it would be crap. I thought it was going to be a shallow money grab. I thought my former employer would botch it because, well, I had lost confidence in their creative capacity, as a studio, because a lot of the people I used to work with were no longer there. Although the heads of many of the departments have made the transition to stay there. It's just that a lot of the workers are totally different. So I wasn't entirely confident they'd be able to pull it off. But they showed me. It was a really spectacular thing to see, and experience. And it's just a kind of, I think the most satisfying film I saw last year. I really like Black Panther. And going through the list of things that I saw in the cinema last year, running through them, there wasn't really like a whole lot else that I liked in the theater. And I have to say, this is the most creative thing that I watched out of all last year. Yeah, last year I watched Black Panther, Solo: A Star Wars Story, Avengers: Infinity War, Incredibles 2, Jurassic World: Fallen Kingdom, and Spider-Man: Into the Spider-Verse. So, as you might imagine, Spider-Man: Into the Spider-Verse takes the cake. And yes, I do realize that was a list of big budget Hollywood blah 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 movies that some very sophisticated people who believe in the Criterion Collection may not think are important or worth seeing. The only one that's really genuinely bad was Jurassic World: Fallen Kingdom. The Incredibles 2 met expectations. Avengers: Infinity War did its Avengers thing, so you know, whatever. Like, I don't know. I don't even know how to grade that thing anymore. It's like C. Congratulations, you're average. Even though the execution of things was very good, but then you got Solo: A Star Wars Story. Good execution. Don't care for the concept. So it didn't like emotionally connect with me. Black Panther. Emotionally connected, except for, well, I don't have the world experience, but I appreciate the world that is in this film. That movie suffers from some Marvel symptoms, like, we need to have our fight scene now. The conclusion to that fight scene, where they're just sitting watching the sunset, is good. So overall, I think it's a good movie, and it deals with very complex themes that I don't feel like any of the other things I saw in the theater, including Spider-Man, deal with. But Spider-Man: Into the Spider-Verse certainly is the most enjoyable experience, and I really highly recommend that everybody go see that. And I don't want to spoil anything about it. It is very sophisticated in how it's made, and I believe Todd Vaziri had said there isn't a lazy shot in the movie, and Philip Lord faved that tweet. So that lets you know that that Todd
is very important.
It's very important. He has good taste, as an Academy member should.
Because the Academy Awards are known for their perfect taste.
No, they're not. But what's interesting is Todd can actually vote for it. So start your campaign to lobby Todd Vaziri. No,
you gotta keep money out of Academy politics.
Yes,
it's ruining it these days.
Yes, no, but I don't know. Have you been thinking about the movies you saw last year? Were there any standouts for you?
I feel like I should go back and look at
Jurassic World: Fallen Kingdom.
No, I feel like I should go back and look at everything that I've seen. But I watched a few things over this little break here. I watched the Bird Box, the Netflix Bird Box, which I enjoyed. It wasn't anything, you know, crazy groundbreaking, but I thought it was incredibly tense and suspenseful, and it did what it was supposed to do. I watched Shape of Water, finally, which is a really screwed up movie, and there is something wrong with Guillermo del Toro.
Oh, now you think that?
I mean, I never super loved his movies in the first place, but after seeing this, like, even at parts in this movie, Amanda was like, what's the matter with the guy who made this? Like, seriously, this is messed up.
Yeah.
And then I watched the new Mission Impossible Fallout. I bought the 4K on my 4K there, and it looked real nice. And you know, that's it's good. It's a Mission Impossible movie.
Oh, we haven't discussed this because I don't believe you had the product last time.
Mm.
So you have your Fire Stick 4K hooked up, yep, to your 4K television. And they're both HDR, right?
Yes.
And is this HDR 10, Dolby Vision? What do you got? What are you working with?
I believe it's HDR 10.
Okay. And you purchased this Mission Impossible movie in 4K HDR 10 to watch on your TV, and it was amazing?
I like the phrasing of that question. It was very nice. It actually... It looked 4K to my eyes, barely, because I was far away. Again, it probably didn't matter if it was 1080 or 4K, because viewing distance.
Whenever I hear anybody say, to my eyes now, all I think is Casey.
Yes.
Yeah, our dear friend Casey Liss. All he ever says is, to my eyes, and phenomenal.
In any case, it looked pretty good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the way it looked. I feel like if I got closer to it, I would be able to scrutinize it better. But, you know, having, you know, late nights, kind of smudgy glasses, whatever the hell, it looked like a 4K image on my TV, which is, you know, new.
That's good. As we've established, I have no love for Mr. Cruise, and I haven't seen any Mission Impossible movie since the second movie.
Oh my goodness. There's so much to see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, if you're not into that, I also watched, we watched it in one night. We watched all of Homecoming, which was good.
I've heard good things, but I don't know. I'm just apprehensive about the time sink. But you did it in one night? That's a long...
We did it...
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, they're 30-minute episodes, so it's like 4 hours, but... or 5 hours, I guess. It's good. I mean, it's not earth-shattering. I'm not going to put it on the list with, greatest TV series that I've ever seen, but it was good. It's got a lot of mystery. It's got some intrigue, some interesting ideas. But like, once you figure out what's going on, you're just like, all right, cool, sure.
Are you going to listen to the podcast from Gimlet Media that this is based on and compare and contrast?
I was 3/4 of the way through it before I remembered that this was a Gimlet property, because I always tune out all of their stupid commercials. I appreciate that they put the special ad music behind their ads, because I can fast forward real quick and then figure out where the ad stops.
Life hack.
Yeah, but speaking of podcasts, I just recently started, I mean, since I watch television all the time, regular television, I keep seeing all of the ads for Conan O'Brien's new podcast, which has like 5 episodes, and I listened to all of them today, and they're actually, you know, they're fun. It's Conan O'Brien talking to people from his show, you know, being himself. They're just under an hour, I think, each, and they're nice. I enjoyed listening to those today.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, I didn't get a lot of podcast listening in over the vacation, because we were running around doing stuff all the time. So I'm just starting to catch up, and I don't really have like anything earth shattering to share. I had listened to Nicole Byers' podcast, which had been around for a while, right before I went on my trip. Nicole Byers, Why Won't You Date Me? She's a very funny comic, whose work was first made evident to me in, I believe it was Girl Code that Jason was watching. She was one of the comedians they would cut away to explain to things. But anyway, her work is a little more colorful, shall we say, than what she was saying on MTV television for primetime broadcast. But she's got an episode called Nicole Reviews Guy Fieri's Restaurant at the Burbank Airport with Justin Noble, where she literally talks about a date she went on where they bought plane tickets to go to the Burbank Airport and review the guy's burger stand inside of inside of the airport, which is the content that I feel like everyone needs. But she also has a comedy special on Netflix now. It's like comedians around the world or whatever. I don't know. It's various ones. Nick Swarston has one, which I'm too scared to listen to. But there is a Nicole Byer episode that we watched last night because it's only like 38 minutes long. So that was a good piece of Netflix content. I have not seen the Netflix Bandersnatch. I have not seen the Bird Box. I have not participated in any of the stuff. I haven't even seen Roma yet, which everyone raved about, but then seemingly has forgotten this week, as it is Bird Box Bandersnatch week. Yeah.
I missed Roma week. Apparently, that's who? That's Cuarón.
Yeah, yeah. It was in theaters for 3 weeks prior to it being available on Netflix, and I think it was available like December 18th or something like that, like 19th maybe. It had a 3 week exclusivity window where they four-walled it. They bought the theaters to show it in, so that nobody had ticket numbers. And they screened that only at a few locations to basically like satisfy, I think, Cuarón and to satisfy some Academy voters. But who knows if that's going to work for them, for their strategy of trying to get an Academy Award without doing a wide release. Still haven't seen it, but everybody says it's great.
It's about Rome?
Nope.
Oh, what's it about then?
Did you not read like anything about it?
No, I didn't.
You know what? Is this like a total media blackout thing?
No, I apparently don't follow anyone who cared about it.
Oh, so this is about his childhood and growing up in his home in Mexico City and having a lady who would take care of them, basically like a live-in nanny kind of a situation. And it's basically about her, about how she lived, and that is the episode.
Okay,
episode. Sorry, movie. It's a movie. I'm sorry. I'm not Steven Spielberg. I'm not saying that anything that's on a television set only is a TV movie. But yeah, those are I think the milestones I've missed. People shouldn't release so much stuff around the holidays. I know that for whatever reason there are people who go to the movie theaters on Christmas Day and they watch stuff then, but I'm busy, guys. I'm too busy. I can't do all this stuff. You guys need to not release anything for like the 3 weeks around Christmas. Just let us digest all of the Christmas stuff that exists already or Christmas specific movies, but everything else just put it in a box and wait till 2019 or ship it in November, because I don't have the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's back to work time.
Yeah. And speaking of getting back to work, let's get back to the end of the show, because we've been talking and we're done now.
Yeah.
Mm. Go see Spider-Man, people.
Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, including Dan. Go do it, Dan.
I'm going to try.
Be a cool kid.
It's a busy, busy week.
You're going to be cool like Todd, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I would like to be cool like Todd.
Everybody wants to be cool like Todd.